Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
How would you like a 15% discount to my daily email, the stack of stuff, the show notes, discounts to the conference, all of that? All you need to do is text the word show to 33777. You'll get the annual subscription with a 15% discount to my daily email. You'll get the stack of stuff, the links to the show notes, discounts to the conference, and so much more. All you have to do is text the word show, S-H-O-W, to 33777. Text show to 33777.
Welcome to the Eric Erickson Show podcast, hour two.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, delighted to have you with me. It's Eric Erickson here across the United States of America. The phone number is 877-973-7425. You know, I mentioned the use of the phrase people who failed at life, and, well, some people get upset with me for saying that. I also use the phrase the Lucky Sperm Club, and people get upset with me for saying that. But it's true. There are people like Chelsea Clinton who would have never gotten the fancy job she got except she was Bill and Hillary Clinton's daughter. So we can call them Nepo babies, whatever you want. But, you know, there are privileged people who benefit by virtue of who their parents are. And there's not really anything wrong with that per se, except oftentimes more credible, competent people get a job than the kids who just happen to be members of the Lucky Sperm Club because who their parents are. And I actually want to spend a moment on this because there's a legitimate point that needs to be pursued here. I want to play for you a couple of clips. The first is from Molly Young Fast on MSNBC. Listen to this.
Jen Palmieri on my podcast the other day, and she's just so knowledgeable. And she was talking about the election that she thinks it's the closest to maybe this Obama reelect. So I do think there are a lot of really relevant recent historical examples that we can point to. But yes, it's very scary. I mean, it's not like he's running against Mitt Romney. He's running against someone who has decided he's going to weaponize and change the entire federal government. He's going to make every branch of it an arm of the Trump campaign. That's very scary.
Now, you may not know who Molly Young Fast is, but you know her grandfather. I guarantee you, you know her grandfather. Her grandfather wrote a book that became a very famous movie, Spartacus. Her mother was a famous feminist who advanced second wave feminism, Erica Jong. Her father also a very progressive writer. And let's just be real here. Molly Young Fast would not have gotten in, the doors would not have opened for her, but she is the granddaughter of the man who wrote Spartacus. Her mother was a famous feminist and author, and she herself is not spectacularly accomplished. She's written for The Daily Beast and The Atlantic and Vanity Fair, and now she's a political analyst on MSNBC without a whole lot of experience in politics. But she says the things that the left wishes her to say. Now, let's go to the next clip from MSNBC. Cyrus Beschloss.
It seems that Biden is leaking youth support. I think it's impossible to look at any of the data that we've collected and say that Biden's in a great position with young voters. I think the reason for that, it's not Gaza. Believe it or not, it's not Gaza, despite everything that we've been seeing the last few weeks. It's the kitchen table issues. It's the boring stuff.
The boring stuff. Generation Lab. He's not wrong in what he says there, but he wouldn't be sitting at that table, except he is Michael Beschloss's son. Michael Beschloss is the historian who, on a near daily basis, on Morning Joe on MSNBC, tells us that Donald Trump is a threat to democracy and an authoritarian who'll never give up power. He consults with Joe Biden and helps Joe Biden. He's a famous historian of the left. Cyrus Beschloss would not be on MSNBC any more than Molly Young Fast is on MSNBC, but for his parental lineage, he's a member of the Lucky Sperm Club. Tim Russert's son, Luke Russert, got a job at NBC and left to go find himself after not being very much of a great reporter and is now back doing live events for MSNBC and NBC because his last name is Russert and his father was the famous Tim Russert of Meet the Press. At CNN for a while, they had Valerie Jarrett's daughter there. She got her job because she was Valerie Jarrett's daughter. Let's be honest here. Now she's at NBC. Guess what? Yes, Comcast. It is like where Nepo babies of the left go to work. They've also got, of course, Jen Psaki, who made waves the other day. And she is there because she worked for Joe Biden as his press secretary, and she made this provocative statement.
I think there's two categories. I mean, there's obviously the Tim Scott category, as you said. That's embarrassing to watch, cringy. I've watched it many times. I think many of them want to be close to power. They also assume or have this thought in their mind that maybe Donald Trump will go away. Maybe he'll go to jail. Maybe he will die, not to be too morbid, but maybe, I mean, he's not a young man.
Okay. Maybe he'll die. That's her explanation for why some of these want to be there. She earned her credibility. I got to give her that. She started her job in politics, working her way up in politics. And she got there, but she got there because she worked for Joe Biden. She was his press secretary. Now, all of this is to say, again, there's nothing inherently wrong with you helping your kid get a job. One day, maybe I'll be in the position to help my kid get a job. I was able to help my kid align her with a friend of mine from college who's an engineer so my kid could get some work experience during the summer. Parents get to help their kids. But what's notable here is we're talking about the elite. Cyrus Beschloss, Molly Young Fast, and others, Luke Russert, they get on MSNBC. And what do? They tell the elite that they are from what the elite want to hear. They're just the next generation of the elite. They have become part of the aristocracy in this country. And we're at this wild situation in this country now where a lot of people talk about peak capitalism or post-capitalism. What's happening now is more and more in our society, particularly the left, more so than the right. They've lost trust in the American people. They only trust themselves and the people of their aristocratic pool. And they align everything through legacy admissions to the Ivy League, to their access to TV and the media, their access to cultural institutions. They line themselves up in order to perpetuate their own ideas, good or bad. And they've taken their ideas out of the free marketplace of ideas. They've elevated them by virtue of their by virtue of the Lucky Sperm Club as opposed to the value of the ideas, the merit of the ideas. There is no meritocracy among these people. And so what happens is, like inbreeding, things go awry. And it is essentially cultural, institutional inbreeding. If a brother and a sister marry each other and have a baby, that baby may be off a little bit. If the brother and the sister have another baby, and those babies marry each other when they grow up, they're going to have a kid who's probably not going to survive, and if so, will have serious abnormalities. Incest is against the law because it's a very bad thing to pollute the genetic bloodline of society. But incest at the intellectual level is essentially what happens through the Lucky Sperm Club with these elite groups and what you see on MSNBC. And it's also what you see in much of Washington, D.C. these days. It's what you see among the elite policymakers. They elevate their friends and classmates from their elite institutions. They elevate their children and the children of their friends from their elite institutions who got into the institutions not because of their merit, but because they were legacies. And the meritocracy collapses in on itself. They don't respect the meritocracy because they don't respect the American people. You know, I say all the time, people are stupid. In fact, you go to my website now, and you can buy a coffee mug that says people are stupid, and I stand by it. People are stupid. And so what you want to do is you want to put a bunch of stupid people into the free market where their ideas can compete against each other and the best ideas, the good ideas, rise. That doesn't happen at MSNBC because at MSNBC, it depends on who your mommy and daddy are as to whether or not you get on TV. And guess what? You're probably going to parrot your mommy and your daddy when you get on TV. You're going to share the same worldview as your mommy and your daddy. And so it becomes self-perpetuating and self-regurgitating, and people lose out on the good idea, the challenging ideas. And this then gets us into a society where you have kids who go to the Ivy League who don't want to be challenged by other ideas. They want to be affirmed in the pre-existing ideas they came from their worldview inherited from their parents. What makes this really bad is when you get into business and you get into bureaucracy. And the federal bureaucracy starts picking the winners and the losers in the businesses. They're going to pick the winners who affirm their worldview, not the losers. I didn't have time with Eric Hovde yesterday to talk about this in his background. But one of the things I am deeply concerned about in Washington right now is the moral hazard that the government has created because we have allowed the technocrats to run the country for so long, and the technocrats are picking winners and losers in businesses. They're not allowing businesses to collapse because of their bad decisions. They're bailing them out. That perpetuates moral hazard. That is, companies decide that they can engage in ever riskier behaviors that the government will bail out. And we as a nation don't have the money to keep bailing out bad businesses who make bad decisions because they have become risk advantageous because they know the elites in Washington who have self-perpetuated themselves are going to keep bailing them out. And what that ultimately does is it begins to destabilize the foundations of society because society itself realizes, I can't get ahead. I'm not a member of the Lucky Sperm Club. I can't get ahead. And the country's now illegitimate. The elite are illegitimate. The bureaucracy is illegitimate. The technocrats who make decisions are illegitimate because it's not about the merit of their ideas. It's not about the caliber of their ideas. It's not about their merit as an individual. It's about who they know, who they are, whose children they are, who they're connected to. And that is a real problem. You see it playing out at MSNBC. That network has become assassination porn where they want Donald Trump dead. They don't care how it happens. They've inspired two political mass assassins in this country already. And you can't tell them to knock it off because they are absolutely convinced in their own little bubble they're right. And they are affirmed by their little bubble, which is just a bubble of people they are related to. It is incestuous. And incest destabilizes society. MSNBC is the most elevated, practical, best example of this right now. I saw Cyrus Beschloss, and I was like, wait a second. That's Michael Beschloss's kid. That's the only reason this guy is on here. That's the only reason he's there is because of who his dad is. And he can deny it. He can say it's the merit of his world, but let's not kid ourselves. You're not going to put that kid on MSNBC, and he's not a kid. He's older than me, but you're not going to put him on. You're not going to put him on except because of who his father is. That's not going to happen. You're not going to have Molly Young Fast is not some sort of paragon of, no, he's younger than me. Anyway, she's not a brilliant strategic political thinker. She's the child of the elite. She's the child of people more accomplished than herself. So you take MSNBC now, you apply it to Wall Street, you apply it to the Biden administration, you apply it to the law clerks at the Supreme Court, you apply it to the Congress. You can increasingly see how so many people believe the country no longer works for them. It works of the people or of the elite, for the elite, and by the elite. And so to go full circle to yesterday. You at least need to understand that's why so many people support Donald Trump. Because they know he's of the elite too. But it sounds like he's working for them when these people clearly disdain them. And these people are ready to blow up a system that doesn't benefit them anymore. And they'll take Donald Trump over Joe Biden, a man who elevates the Lucky Sperm Club over the meritocracy of the American people. And hell may come with it, but it'll be first directed towards the elite. And everybody else will be fine with that.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and Talkspace, the leading virtual therapy provider, is encouraging people to talk it out in therapy. By talking or texting with a supportive, licensed therapist at Talkspace, you'll gain insights, discover truths, and experience breakthroughs that will improve how you live and how you feel. With Talkspace, just answer a few questions online, and you'll be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, whenever you feel most at ease. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members only pay a $25 copay or less. No insurance? No problem. If you want to make progress toward a mentally healthier place, Talkspace is here for you. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Welcome. I want to play you this audio from ABC News this morning about TikTok.
Now to TikTok suing the federal government over the law that would force its Chinese owners to sell the video sharing app. Our senior congressional correspondent, Rachel Scott, has the latest. Good morning to you, Rachel.
Hey, Robin, good morning to you. TikTok is taking on the federal government, setting up a showdown in court over free speech and national security. It has been 2 weeks since the president signed that bipartisan bill into law that forces TikTok's Chinese parent company to either sell the app or face a complete and total ban here in the United States. Well, this morning, TikTok's parent company is making it clear they cannot and will not be selling the platform. So on one end of this, you have a bipartisan group of lawmakers, even the president. They are arguing that TikTok poses a national security risk, and that by using the platform, the Chinese government could have access to your data, including your browsing history, even your location. TikTok denies those allegations. They say it would take years for them to find a new set of engineers to figure out how to program the platform, and that it would force a shutdown of the app here in the United States by January of next year. They also argue that a ban infringes on the rights of 170 million Americans who use the platform here in the United States. In this lawsuit, TikTok also points out that the Biden campaign continues to use the platform even after the president signed that bill into law. They insist that completely undermines their argument that this poses a risk to.
I can stop there. You notice she says TikTok says it cannot sell, but she doesn't give you the reason why. This is ABC, which does a lot of business with Disney in China, not wanting to point out that in their lawsuit, TikTok says the Chinese government will not allow them, completely undercutting their entire case. And Disney-owned ABC News will say TikTok says it cannot sell, but doesn't want to tell you why TikTok says it cannot sell. Doesn't want to tell you the truth. Amazing that they cover. Is it any wonder people don't trust the American media? TikTok, in its lawsuit, says it cannot sell because the Chinese government won't let them, thereby admitting they're controlled by the Chinese government. But you never know that from ABC. Now, let me tell you about AFP. They're doing a bus tour around the country to remind you that prosperity is possible. People just seem to forget the tried and true. At some point, I need to write a book on this. We know what works in this country. We know the free market works. We know Americans in arm's length transactions make better decisions for themselves than bureaucrats in Washington. We know cutting taxes stimulates growth, which then increases revenue to the federal treasury. We know that by the government spending so much money, they drive up inflation. We know all of these things. We've known them all along. We've just forgotten them. And Americans for Prosperity wants to remind you of them. You go to prosperityispossible.com, find out where their bus tour is going to be. They want to remind you that we know the tried and true ideas of American capitalism, how to get the economy firing on all cylinders, increase your family's wealth and net worth, and put Americans back to work. Go to prosperityispossible.com today. Find out where the tour is going to be from Americans for Prosperity. Greetings. Welcome. It's Eric Erickson here. The phone number, 877-973-7425. I want to read for you a opinion piece. It's in the New York Times. I know. Brett Stevens. I know. Just follow along with me here. The title is A Thank You Note to the Campus Protesters. Dear anti-Israel campus protesters, though it may take a few years before you realize it, supporters of Israel like me have reason to give thanks to militant anti-Zionists like you. Recently, a friend asked what I would have made of your protests if they had been less fervently one-sided. If, for instance, pro-Palestinian student groups at Harvard and Columbia hadn't castigated Israel immediately following the worst massacre of Jews since the Holocaust. Or if Jewish students and professors hadn't faced violence, harassment, and anti-Semitic imagery from you or your allies from Harvard to Columbia to Berkeley to Stanford, or if you had made a point of acknowledging the reality of the October 7th rapes or the suffering of Israel's hostages and their families while demanding their safe return, or if you consistently condemned and distanced yourself from Hamas, or if all of you had simply followed the rules that gave you every right to free expression without trampling on the rights of others to a safe and open campus. In short, what if your protests had focused on Israel's policies, whether in Gaza or the West Bank, rather than demanding the complete elimination of Israel as a Jewish state? What if you had avoided demonizing anyone who supported Israel's right to exist, which includes a vast majority of Jews as modern-day Nazis? In that case, I told my friend, I would have disagreed with your views, but I wouldn't have despised them. Nor would a broad plurality of Americans, including many to my left. The result could have been a movement that would have had stronger arguments and greater impact. You would have been able to win over undecideds to your cause, and I would have had to fight harder to make my case that Israel must get rid of Hamas. I realize this isn't how some of you see it. The most hardline among you want to sharpen the contradictions, as the Marxists say. Your real goal was not to shape U.S. government policy, at least in the near term. What you really want to do is normalize anti-Zionism, particularly on elite college campuses, where hoping that the bigger payoff will come in 20 or 30 years when those you've converted to your cause become senators and governors and university presidents. But the problem with sharpening the contradictions is that the contradictions begin sharpening as your own. For every student who becomes ardently pro-Palestinian during the protests, another one, perhaps a Jewish student with previously indifferent feelings about Israel, finally saw the connection between anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism. For every professor who's shown up at your encampment to lend support, you've lost a fair-minded liberal with your Maoist-style sloganeering and your arrogant disdain for the genuine fears of some of your Jewish peers. For every commencement ceremony whose cancellation you've effectively forced or which you intend to spoil, thousands of apolitical students who didn't get to have a proper high school graduation thanks to COVID have taken an intense and permanent distaste to you and everything you stand for. In short, if sharpening the contradictions is the game you're playing, it's paying bigger dividends for my side than it is for yours. It's also nothing new. Those 1968 protests you're trying to emulate? What they mainly helped achieve was the election of Richard Nixon, followed by nearly 40 straight years of right-of-center governance in the United States. Nor is this the only help you're giving my side. I'm a Zionist, not only because I support Israel's right to exist as a Jewish state, an abstract point about another country, I'm also a Zionist for the most personal of reasons— because I see Israel as an insurance policy for every Jewish family, including mine, which has endured persecution and exile in the past and understands that we may not be safe forever in our host countries. For anyone with a historic memory of France until Dreyfus, Germany until Hitler, or Iran until Khomeini, that kind of insurance is one Jews can't afford to lose. What happened on October 7th shook my faith in the quality of that insurance. What else does the Israeli state exist for, after all, if not to protect its people from the kind of butchery they endured that day? But what happened on October 8th, the moment your protests began, renewed my faith because it gave me a glimpse into what America might yet become for Jews at least if people like you were to gain real power. I get that many, if not most of you, see yourselves as dedicated idealists who want to end suffering for Palestinians, champion equality, and oppose all forms of bigotry. There are ways you could do that without making common cause with people who hate Jews, want to kill us, and often do. Supporting a two-state solution would be one such way. Instead, insisting that Palestinians deserve better leaders than Hamas is another. Building bridges with Israelis is a third. Instead, without knowing it, you are my daily reminder of what my Zionism is for, about, and against. For that, if nothing else, thank you. That's Brett Stevens, columnist at the New York Times, who is a center-right columnist. He used to write for the Wall Street Journal, moved over to the New York Times. He's got a point. Now, the reaction to his column, of course, has been dismissive. From those on the left who support the protesters, they've been very dismissive, but I don't think they should be. You know, again, so Cyrus Beschloss, young guy, he's in his 30s. His father's Michael Beschloss. He wouldn't be on MSNBC but for his dad. But he runs something called Generation Lab where he studies young voters. And he pointed out on MSNBC that young voters, Joe Biden's lost them because of kitchen table issues, not because of the war in Israel. But he also pointed out the overwhelming majority, over 90% of college students in this country, they're not protesting on college campuses. Now, part of that is a left-wing talking point that has developed in the last 96 hours as backlash grows against the protests. And whoa, 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 don't blame the left. Don't blame us. 95% of us aren't involved. But also, it is true, most college kids are there for an education. Not in the Ivy League, though. Not in the Ivy League. In most colleges, though, most colleges aren't the Ivy League. Glenn Reynolds, Instapundit, he's got a piece up today. Pushback works. That's the lesson of the pro-Hamas protests on college campuses and the reaction to them. It's a lesson that many of us need to take to heart. With support from lefty foundations and non-governmental organizations and training from professional leftist advocates and activists, pro-Hamas encampments were established at campuses all across America. Libraries were the victims of rampages. Jewish students literally wound up hiding in attics, were assaulted and were taunted and greeted with chants of go back to Poland. Checkpoints manned by Hamas sympathizers barred Jewish students or anyone who wouldn't renounce Zionism from some parts of campus. American flags were torn down and replaced with Palestinian flags. It looked as if the protesters had the momentum as university administrators responded supinely. And then something happened. People fought back, mostly fraternity guys, who in this season have become the defenders of Western civilization. For decades, of course, leftist mobs on campus have run wild without much pushback. Their threats and destruction have been excused as just a passion for justice or some such. While university administrators demand exquisite sensitivity to the feelings of favored groups, everyone else is told to just put up with lefty excess. But a funny thing happened. When people started pushing back, suddenly the administrators got some backbone. To be fair, the pushback hadn't just been seen from frat boys. There's been pressure from donors sufficient to get some university presidents fired. But when it came to getting the encampments moved off campus, it was the on-campus resistance that did that. It wasn't just the frat guys. UCLA told its police not to do anything to the pro-Hamas encampment, even after a pro-Israel Jewish girl was beaten unconscious. It was attacked by pro-Israel students and neighbors and torn down while the police didn't arrive to the encampment, which reportedly was emblazoned with "all cops are," well, I can't say that word on radio and the like, for 2 hours. Afterwards, UCLA removed the encampment. Since then, Columbia, the University of Chicago, and MIT have done the same. The fact is, if nobody resists, most people will go with the flow even if they don't like it. But as soon as the violence becomes two-sided, they fear expanding disorder and act to bring things under control. Now, that's not a call for violence. It's not a call for violence. It's just a statement of the reality the way these college campuses operated. That until people had enough and took action, the universities were not going to respond. But the backlash is coming. This is the thing that the leftists don't appreciate. When you listen, as I do, to a lot of the theories of the left right now, one of the things that comes up again and again is their inevitability. And their inevitability comes from that idea when Barack Obama was president to never let a crisis go to waste. And they see a series of crises, and they also see Donald Trump. And they are convinced that Donald Trump can't get reelected. And because Donald Trump can't get reelected, that means Joe Biden will continue to be president, and that means that they and their policies will continue to be advocated by the federal government. But so they are inevitable. So they have no reason to stop. The problem is, and this gets back to Bret Stephens' point, the last time this sort of thing happened in the 1960s, it led to 40 years of right-of-center governance in the United States. Remember, it was Bill Clinton that passed welfare reform, and it was Bill Clinton who passed the three strikes you're out law. It was Bill Clinton who wanted to be tough on crime. It was a Democrat who realized the country had turned against the progressive activists from the 1960s. Starting to happen again. And this time they think the situation has changed. This time they think there's no way Donald Trump's getting elected president again, so they can do whatever they want. They are deluding themselves. They're deluding themselves. They've convinced themselves of their own inevitability, and that is going to be their downfall. That right there. It's going to be hilarious, honestly, to watch this play out. Can you imagine? So I was in a newsroom 2016, the night of Trump's election. There were reporters crying. A friend of mine was in a newsroom in Washington, D.C. of a national news network that will go nameless. Said people behind the cameras were in tears. Can you imagine if Donald Trump does get reelected? I mean, I told you the story the other day in the New York Times. The people in Washington who were privately saying, if he gets elected, I'm moving to New Zealand, I'm moving to Portugal, I'm moving to Canada, I'm moving to France. Kind of makes you want him to get elected when these sorts of people are saying they're going to leave. But so many of the people on the left right now are so convinced there's no way he ever gets reelected that they can get away with it. They're emboldened to try. They're emboldened to do it. They're emboldened because they in their bubble have convinced themselves that they, not he, is inevitable. And the irony is that they are making him inevitable because they just can't help themselves. Here's the thing. We've reached the point where we see whether Trump wins or loses, the left burns down the country. So there will be a lot of people who will conclude if the country's going to burn one way or the other, at least he gives us a fighting chance against them. And the left doesn't appreciate that because they've lost touch with the American people. So much of the Democratic Party has too. Old Glory Bank has not. Old Glory Bank wants to be your bank. And now listen, I'm going off script. They've got things they want me to highlight for you, but I've got to do this one. And so you guys at Old Glory Bank, if you're listening, don't be mad. I went to Las Vegas. I played craps. I brought home a lot of money. I did very well at the craps table. Well, it was cash. Old Glory Bank is my bank. It has been my bank since last year. I left an online bank. And that online bank, you could not deposit cash into that bank. And we had another bank because we needed somewhere to put our cash. With Old Glory Bank, I don't need another bank. It's just Old Glory Bank. So their app is so innovative because the bank is so innovative that they've worked with 88,000 retail locations around the country, including a CVS outside my neighborhood. And I can take a QR code. I can generate it on my phone on the Old Glory Bank app. I can go to the store. The clerk at the cash register scans the QR code, takes my money, counts my money, and then puts in how much money I'm depositing, and it is credited to my bank account. I have not had to find a compatible ATM. I have not had to find a compatible bank branch. I have found one of 88,000 retail locations where I can use the app with a QR code and deposit the cash in my bank account, and you can do it too. It's oldglorybank.com. You can get an account set up in 8 minutes or less, and it just works. It works amazingly well. It's an amazing bank built by conservatives, designed by conservatives, for conservatives. You're never going to get your bank account canceled for being a conservative, and you can deposit cash unlike pretty much any other online bank out there. OldGloryBank.com, OldGloryBank.com. You have no fee checking and no fee savings as well. Terms and conditions apply. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Hello there and welcome. It is Eric Erickson across the United States. The phone number is 877-973-7425. Should you wish to be on the program, Jason Smith, Republican member of Congress, was on with Maria Bartiromo this morning and said this.
It's being funded by these progressive organizations. In fact, at the Ways and Means Committee, Maria, we have been looking at these tax-exempt status of these organizations and how they have been funneling terrorism. In fact, there's been millions of dollars that we have discovered that has went to Hamas and terrorist organizations, let alone you see a lot of these foundations that are funding and pushing and promoting this anti-Semitic approach on college campuses.
So do you want to cut federal funding to universities?
I think we have to look at every lever. And in the Ways and Means Committee, we look at the generous benefits that these universities have when it comes to generous tax benefits, being tax-free, and also these billion-dollar endowments they have. They might need to see a higher tax.
He's not wrong. Universities are playing with fire on this stuff, and they don't even realize it. I think it's time to kill the student loan program. Now, I needed student loans to go to college. I had a great, well, I should say law school. I got a little bit of a student loan just for some expenses in college, but I had a great scholarship. My daughter, we got to have her finance meeting tomorrow about how we're going to pay for college for her. Not looking forward to that conversation, but got to happen. But y'all, you gut the student loan program, these colleges are going to have to get serious again. They can be unserious because the federal government subsidizes them. It's time to make that go away.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.